Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi there, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Tuesday, October 5th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. With me today are environmental reporter Sue Sirks and breaking news editor Manny Fabian, covering the military beat this week for us. Manny, let's get started with you this morning. A lot of headlines on our page about the government decision to step up Shin Bet involvement in fighting rising organized crime in the Arab communities. Why don't we first tackle that piece of it, and then we'll get into the various other parts of it. Get us started on that issue, and which has obviously been under debate for several weeks.
Sure. So the government got together, a number of ministers got together to kind of tackle this issue of rising crime in Israel's Arab community. And just for a bit of background, a lot of that crime is related to gun violence. And this year so far, 95 people in the community have been killed in various crimes, but most of them related to guns. So the ministers decided that the Shin Bet, the security agency which generally deals with Palestinians in the West Bank and is very invasive on that front, but they've decided to somehow involve them in this crackdown on the crime and the illegal weapons. It's not clear exactly to what extent. They're still working on exactly what sort of capabilities they'd be allowed to be used to deal with this issue.
Right, and what it will look like, obviously, because it's sort of never before seen kind of issue. Now, I know that you've also written about the fact that Arab Israelis are very divided on this government decision to step up the Shin Bet involvement, and that some are firmly opposed and others are, as you've written, desperate for solutions to combat this escalating violence. What does that look like in terms of your reporting? What have some of the reactions been?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty mixed, because on one hand, they want the situation to be solved. They want these murders to end. But on the other hand, the Shin Bet is, like I said, very invasive. Their tactics are, not the most, people don't love their tactics. They've been involved with, administrative detentions, holding people without charge, reported torture during their interrogations, things that aren't really the most great things around. But at the same time, it's gone to a point where they really want the situation to be dealt with already. So I think that the Shin Bet won't be interrogating people and torturing people. It probably won't get to that kind of situation, but they'll use their intelligence capabilities to kind of track down where these illegal weapons are, or who's involved with them, or where smuggling is taking place. I think that's where the direction of the Shin Bet is in this situation.
And just another question about that. Obviously, there's most of the fingers of blame are being pointed at organized crime in the Arab communities. Could you talk a little bit about that? Explain what that means exactly. In other words, when we're talking about organized crime, is it organized crime equivalent to like the mafia in the States? Is it equivalent to something else? What does that look like in terms of your reportage?
Sure. A lot of it is organized crime. And that is one of the main accusations against the police, that in the early 2000s or in the 1990s, the police managed to combat the Jewish organized crime, but now they're not dealing with it with the Arab community. But looking back on the murders this year, some of them, I'm not sure, I wouldn't say all of them, but there's a significant amount that weren't part of organized crime. It just happened to be that because there's an ease of access to weapons in the Arab community, that even random people who just happened to have a gun and got into a fight, or even domestic violence, and they'll kill a family member or kill somebody random that they got into a fight with. And it's not always just organized crime. So I think that's where maybe the Shin Bet could help, where the police can deal with the organized crime bit, because they have the capabilities to deal with organized crime. But perhaps the Shin Bet would be there to deal with the more complicated cases of guns being around, or people who are maybe suspected of having a gun and acting out of their own accord rather than sort of some part of organization.
Okay, so then you had another story on the issue, reporting that Public Security Minister Omer Bar-Lev, of course, Public Security Minister who deals with these specific issues, said that the IDF, that the Israel Defense Forces, would not be involved in efforts to address this epidemic of violent crime in Israel's Arab communities. So where did that come from, and what does that actually mean in real time?
So basically, that came from an announcement from the ministers after they met. They announced that the IDF and the Shin Bet, but they said the IDF would be involved in dealing with this issue as a whole. And the IDF kind of also said themselves that they weren't really involved in it. And then Omer Bar-Lev gave a public kind of a clarification on this, that the IDF wasn't going to be, you know, conducting arrests and raids on homes in Arab communities, because that is definitely out of the question. But they would be dealing with the issue of illegal weapons. Now, a lot of the illegal weapons that are circulating around come from the IDF, because that's where a lot of the guns are. Right. Now, the IDF has an issue in some of its bases where they're not protected well enough, and there's break-ins and guns get stolen, and there's dozens of cases of this happening over the years. So with the IDF, I would say what they want them to do is just to do their job a bit better and protect their bases from break-ins and having guns stolen from them. I don't know beyond that what else they'd be doing to then deal with the weapons that are already taken and
already out
circulating.
There.
Yeah.
Right.
So more like just prevent them from being, from more weapons kind of existing and being taken out the army to the criminal side of things.
Okay. And then just a final question, which I don't know if you can answer this yet, because obviously we're at the beginning of the process, which is education in terms of domestic violence and looking at other efforts to sort of clean up the situation. In other words, we're just looking at IDF and police efforts right now. They haven't even gone into other ideas of figuring ways out of this situation. Are they even talking about that yet?
I didn't see yet. I think this is just the start. The announcement was relatively brief after their first meeting. And okay. It mainly discussed having the Shin Bet involved and the IDF involved, kind of. But it didn't exactly address either what the police would be doing, if they'd be changing, if they'd be, you know, different funding to the police, if they'd be changing something up with the police, or they'd be appointing somebody kind of to deal with that thing. So the police side of things hasn't really changed much, and same with the education side of things, or, you know, welfare sort of things. None of that has, as far as I've seen yet, hasn't changed yet. But perhaps in a future meeting, they'll discuss those issues as well.
All right, so then we'll keep on tracking you and how you're reporting on that. Thanks for that.
Definitely.
This Times of Israel podcast is brought to you by Koren Publishers Jerusalem. Whether you're looking to enrich your mind or your soul, Koren Publishers has it all. From Israeli history to the works of Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Steinsaltz, and other contemporary thinkers, including the brand new Magamon edition Koren Tanakh, with translation by Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, Jessica Sacks, and many others. Times of Israel listeners can get 10% off your entire order. Just go to korenpub.com and use the code TOIPOD, that's KORENPUB.com, and enter the code TOIPOD for your 10% discount.
Sue, you have been covering a bizarre case about a Jewish lawyer who has been fighting the Chevron oil company for 28 years and was just sentenced to 6 months in jail. Could you please decipher this story for us a bit?
This is an unusual and totally dystopian story about a U.S. lawyer, Stephen Donziger, who's Jewish, who's been under house arrest for over 2 years. He wears an ankle bracelet. He's had his passport taken away. He's been disbarred and his bank account is being drained. Now, his crime, in inverted commas, depending on who you believe, was to win a class action suit against Chevron in 2011 for oil pollution in the Ecuadorian rainforest. This was a class action suit on behalf of 30,000 people, including many indigenous people. The oil pollution allegedly led to widespread deformities and other horrors, and Chevron was ordered to pay $9.4 billion. Now, if you believe Chevron, Mr. Donziger secured the judgment through fraud, bribery, and corruption. A U.S. court convicted him as such of such. A U.S. court convicted him of this in 2014, and a Hague arbitration tribunal came to the same conclusion in 2018. Chevron's been rather hysterical in pursuing Mr. Donziger. It has devoted an entire website or webpage to besmirching him. But if you believe Donziger's many, many supporters, which includes Nobel Prize winners, a lot of lawyers, a lot of celebrities, he's been pursued as an example, in other words, to prevent other people from from suing the company. A UN report, or a report by a UN working group, came out last week, which pointed to or alleged staggering bias on behalf of the judge and said that his detention was arbitrary and that he should be released and compensated. Now, Donziger has never had a jury trial for all sorts of reasons. Several years ago, he was ordered by a judge to hand over all of his electronic devices and passwords, essentially to Chevron, and he refused on the grounds that it would interfere with client lawyer confidentiality. He was then slapped with a contempt of court conviction. And on Friday, he was sentenced to 6 months imprisonment. Now, the time that he spent at home was not considered. He was denied bail. He is, of course, appealing. But it's a case that just seems to go on and on and on.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty crazy. And then you've also been working on a story for the last bunch of days, maybe even weeks, about oil prospecting in the Arava, in Israel's southern desert region. What are we going to be reading about?
Once again, I'm reporting about oil and fossil fuels. In August, the new energy ministry, Karine El-Haraw, announced that there will be no more licenses for terrestrial oil exploration. But there are two licenses that were awarded before that are still valid. And one of them is a license called Aya. It's in the southern Arava. It's owned by two companies, Shafir and Arbel, and they are about to start seismic surveys. What are those? Those are surveys which show what's underground, what kind of rock, where oil might be found. The locals are very concerned, and they recently met to express their fears. There was one expert, actually a geological expert, who talked about the risk of drilling and earthquakes. Earthquakes have apparently been happening in the United States, but not in a location like the Arava, which is on the seam between two tectonic plates, where there's a lot of seismic activity. Residents are frightened that the landscape is going to be scarred, that there's going to be pollution. And remember that in this area, they're very dependent on preserving their landscapes, because tourism underpins their economy largely. Now, it's not surprising that they're very sensitive about oil. In 2014, a company called the Europe-Asia Pipeline Company had a pipe burst. Oil flowed into the Evrona Nature Reserve. And according to a recent report, 7 years later, the environment there is still not recovering. The same company is now trying to bring massive amounts of oil from the Gulf to channel it from Eilat on the Red Sea through its pipes to Ashkelon and the Mediterranean Sea. That's a deal that has aroused enormous opposition and that the government is now considering. One of the interesting things of the meeting was, it was certainly the first time that I had heard and subsequently got to talk to Yossi Langotsky. Yossi Langotsky essentially opened the way to massive gas discoveries in the East Mediterranean. It was he who discovered the Tamar gas field, and it's actually named after one of his granddaughters, as is the Aya license. Now, he, really? of course, said that everything will be fine. But the project is way behind schedule. The surveys were supposed to start by February 2020. The license runs out in February 22, in other words, in about 6 months. And the question is whether it's going to be renewed. And obviously, a lot of people are hoping that it won't be. He's a geologist, and he's been trying to get investors for 35 years to invest in this area of the Southern Arava because he's convinced that there's oil there.
Wow. Okay. And residents of the Arava just described to us, we're talking about agricultural communities, kibbutzim, moshavim.
Yeah. There's an environmental group called Sababa, and they held an online kind of meeting about this. And yeah, a lot of people from the surrounding kibbutzim.
Okay. Thanks to you both, really, for very different topics, but ones that are, of course, of importance to us all. We're here every day. See you tomorrow on the Daily Briefing. Thanks, Sue and Manny.
Bye.
Bye, thanks.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to The Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.